Welcome to another edition of the SC Times Sports Report podcast. My name is Zach Dwyer, and joining me as he does every week is my co-host Brian Mosey. Brian, we're kind of in the midst of summer here now, a bit of amateur baseball, otherwise not too much on the calendar. So I think today we're going to, you know, go through those last All-Metro teams, talk a little baseball, a little St. John's football, but otherwise, you know, probably not as long of one today, but that's okay. We're kind of in that summer vibe.
Yeah. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July weekend. I know the two of us had a fun one, just being able to enjoy some time with friends, family, and just kind of enjoying that weekend. But definitely, yes, it's nice to kind of get back. And I know we were able to go see our first town ball games this past week, which was kind of fun to see. And definitely nice to be back in the rhythm of things for the summertime.
Yeah, so we'll go through that in the second part of the show. Brian was at two games last week with Dave, and then also we're going to be heading out to Cold Spring for the Springers game tonight when we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. So we'll also have some coverage of that online coming up as well. But the last of the spring season that we're going to start out with today to wrap it up officially, put a bow on it, put it in the past, is our last All-Metro team. So we went through five of them on our last recording, and now today we're going to go through the remaining four that came out kind of near the end of last week into this past weekend, in case you missed it, kind of during that long weekend. So we have softball, baseball, and boys and girls lacrosse. I think we'll start with baseball. I know that was the one that came out most recently that you put together, Brian. This seemed like a fun one. There was a lot of good players this year, but I don't think the decision ended up being too hard on this one.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of good nominations from the coaches and such when I sent out, you know, what they were kind of thinking for nominations, and everybody kind of came back knowing that Cade Lewis from Sartell was going to be probably the player of the year. I mean, he was, when it comes to some of these numbers, you expect certain numbers to dip, and those numbers did not dip. And so, I mean, he had 11 home runs, 38 RBIs, 36 hits, 8 doubles, 2 triples, 3 stolen bases. So you're like, okay, some power. Maybe he'll, you know, not be batting as well. You know, maybe he'll be in like the upper 200s, maybe the lower 300s. No, he batted .468. He had an on-base of .578, a slugging percentage of .1052, and just absolutely dominated the season. And a lot of this came towards the end of the season. He kind of got his groove going towards the end of the season when section tournaments was happening. And it definitely helped. I mean, you had the pitching core, which we'll get to later on in this list. But then you also had the offense, and he was a big part of the offense and the reason why the Sabres were able to win against the number one, number two, and number three seeds in the section tournament to get that section 8-4A title and then go to state tournament. I know they didn't play as well as they were hoping in the state tournament, but still just an unbelievable year, especially for the expectations of many when it came to, you know, when you lose that many seniors, have to fill in that many holes on that varsity offense, and all of a sudden you get hit with all these different injuries as well at the beginning of the season. You kind of thought, okay, maybe Sartell, you know, it's going to be a learning year for a lot of these kids, you know, an opportunity for them to grow, and then, you know, next year, you know, be pretty dominant. But they didn't wait until next year. They definitely showed their gradual process and their gradual increase of, you know, knowledge and just growth. And I mean, just kudos to him on being kind of that leader. He's only a junior, so he'll be coming back next year, and honestly I think he can be one of the most explosive players in central Minnesota.
Yeah, and he had a couple teammates from that Sartell team that you mentioned had such a fantastic end to their season. You have Blake House, who you know, he hit .346 and had a .423 on base percentage, 28 hits. He had a great senior season before he heads off to Winona State to play football. And then you had another really rising player I know we're excited to see again next year in Wesley Johnson, who as a sophomore was just incredible. He had an 8-1 record, a 1.31 ERA, and only a 1.76 opponent batted in average. And I know those numbers were even lower before that state game, where that was his only loss of the season. Before that, he was undefeated, and those numbers were even lower. So, you know, I'm sure he'll learn from that kind of big game experience and come back really strong next year too.
Well, and he pitched against the winning or a state champion Stillwater team. So, I mean, not an easy task when you're a sophomore and you're getting tasked with pitching against against the state champions. But yes, also on this list, a couple Albany guys, well, a few Albany guys. Brady Goebel, a senior, he was kind of that leader for this team, especially after a lot of seniors graduated from this Huskies team last year. He was looked to not only on the mound but also at the plate as well. He batted .365, had 27 hits, 21 runs, 20 RBIs, 8 doubles. He also threw for 50 innings, had a record of 6-3, 42 strikeouts, and an ERA of 3.36. So, I mean, a really good season for him. He's going to Alexandria Technical and Community College to play baseball next season in their new program up there, which is going to be kind of exciting. A lot of Huskies and a lot of Central Minnesota kids are kind of heading up there. So it's going to be kind of a fun, I think it'll be kind of a fun rivalry, especially when you have, you know, St. Cloud Tech over here, as well as, you know, Alexandria Tech up there. So
And with St. Cloud's former coach too. So that just adds, you know, even more fun to that.
Exactly. So, and then the other Albany guys, you have Brandon Holm, who's a senior. He's graduating this year. He batted .403 this season with 31 hits, 27 runs, 21 RBIs, one home run and 10 doubles. He also was kind of their closer this year. He had 7 saves in 21 innings, 20 strikeouts, and an ERA of 0.66, which is unreal for those types of stats. Joining the Huskies group is Caden Sand as well. He's a senior, kind of a steady player for the Huskies this year. He batted .325 with 25 hits, 26 runs, 24 RBIs, 8 doubles, 4 triples, 6 home runs, and 17 walks. He also threw for 25 innings, had 38 strikeouts, a 5-0 record, and a 1.93 ERA. He'll be joining Goebel at Alexandria Tech next year to play baseball in the college world. So congratulations to those three. Also, to kind of round up this first team, Noah Jensen from Sauk Rapids Rice. He's a senior. Definitely showed that leadership this year, both at the plate and on the mound. He batted .262 with a .403 on-base percentage, 16 hits, 3 doubles, 12 RBIs, and 10 runs. He pitched 26.2 innings with a 4-1 record, 23 hits, 9 earned runs, 39 strikeouts, a 2.36 ERA, and a 1.35 whip, which is really good. So congratulations to him. And then also one of his teammates, you have Luke Pakla. He's a junior, so he'll be returning next year and kind of being looked at as probably one of the better players for the Storm this upcoming year. But he batted .364, on base of .447, had 24 hits, 14 RBIs, and 13 runs. And then to kind of round out this team, you have Joel Swada from Recorey, senior second baseman that was steady player for them, batted .338 with an on-base of .408, 23 hits, 11 RBIs, and 15 runs and 7 stolen bases. And then also you have Elon Mesquita from St. Cloud, who's a junior. He'll be returning next year as probably one of the top players in this area, definitely. St. Cloud had to kind of make that transition with the co-op to Class 4A with Tech and Apollo kind of combining together. But he definitely showed that leadership. He batted .338 with an on-base of .393, 26 hits, 4 runs, 3 home runs, 16 RBIs, 11 runs, and 4 stolen bases. He also pitched for the Crush and pitched 36.1 innings with 18 earned runs, 39 hits, 43 strikeouts, an ERA of 3.47, and a whip of 1.51. So some really good outstanding players this year. I know there were some where it was pretty obvious, but there was also some that were a little bit more difficult. And so the second team is just as stacked as the first team. Quite a few juniors and sophomores that will be returning next year. So definitely interested to see what this team looks like next year, just because there's going to be a lot of talent returning for many of the teams locally.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, you can check out all of those names at sctimes.com. See where people fell in the first and second team and check out their stats as well. And then moving to softball, which you also handled, Brian, you know, this was, you had two teams that made it to state that each had, you know, dominant pitchers that led them there for most of the year. I know that was kind of a tough decision, but Cathedral's Ella Voigt named Player of the Year. Just kind of tell me what went into that decision.
Ella had a phenomenal season. I mean, just plain out and simple. Not saying that Shelby didn't have one. She just, when you pitch and you have a record of 22-4 on the season, she pitched 148 innings with 178 strikeouts, 27 walks, 1.13 ERA, and a 1.04 whip. That's just insane. I mean, she was named Pitcher of the Year for the Granite Ridge Conference, co-MVP for the conference as well. She was named to the second team of All-State for Class 2A. She also batted leadoff for the Crusaders as well. And, I mean, the strikeout-to-walk-weight ratio is just insane. 27 walks to 178 strikeouts. That's just unreal. So she's only a sophomore as well, so she's going to be coming back for the next 2 years. And, honestly, the expectations are going to be really high after this type of season. But definitely someone that is taking over this leadership, and with I think four or five seniors that this Cathedral team has, she's going to be looked to as a leader next year as a junior. So be interested to see kind of how she does next year with not as many veteran players, but also a handful of young players that are coming up that are going to be taking over. But Shelby, I mean, Shelby Prom had a really good season. She's a senior for Ricori. She stepped into that number one spot pretty well after Olivia Droddle left last year. And you could tell that she kind of just got in a groove and she was good for the rest of the season. She pitched 102 innings. She went 8-8, had 39 walks, 156 strikeouts, a 3.29 ERA, a 1.40 whip, and an opponent batting average of 250. So, I mean, just insane. She also added three home runs and 27 RBIs offensively with a 325 average, batting average. And so, I mean, she's definitely going to be missed because she's graduating this year. But, I mean, she definitely put in her legacy when it comes to the Spartan softball program.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned that Ella will be back for Cathedral, but there are a lot of big pieces that will be leaving, just like that made their name on this first team. You have Catherine Bell, who hit 449, had, you know, seven doubles, 40 runs, 19 stolen bases. I know that Cathedral team had a crazy amount of stolen bases kind of all throughout their lineup. And, you know, she was an All-State honorable mention pick. And then you have a couple others with Rachel Dingman, also a senior that hit 408, had 34 RBIs, which was the team leading amount, and then also 33 runs. Had some all-conference honors too, and then Kaylee Falconer as well, 437, 34 stolen bases, a couple triples, couple home runs, and then first-team All-State selection too. That is just a huge crop of talent that will be leaving that they're going to have to replace. I know they have a lot of eighth graders, young players that got experience this year, but those will definitely be, you know, three key pillars that will be leaving that team.
Yeah, and I mean, those younger players are on that second team, so that just shows you how much talent this Cathedral team had. Kaylee Falconer also going to Concordia College Moorhead to play softball for the Cobbers next year. So congratulations to her for continuing on with her career of softball. Just to kind of also go through the rest of this first team, one player for St. Cloud was Allie Breitenbach. She's a senior. Similar to the baseball team, they had to co-op as well. So you kind of had to adjust to that Class 4A environment, and she adjusted just fine. She hit 432, played catcher as well as third base for the Crush. She hit 585 with runners in scoring position, and was able to kind of help out that middle of the lineup for the Crush this season. She's going to be heading out to College of Saints Classica next fall to play softball. So kudos to her for continuing on and playing college softball. Also with the St. Cloud Crush was Olivia Laudenbach. She's a junior, so she'll be coming back next year. She's been the leadoff hitter for the last couple of years for this team, and rightfully so. She batted 551 this season, 11 doubles, 39 runs, 21 stolen bases, played third base and shortstop for the Crush. She got all section honors as well as Central Lakes all conference honors. She'll be returning next year and hopefully to kind of continue being that consistent player for the St. Cloud Crush next year.
And then for Sartell, a couple names as well. You had Danica Sarf as a junior who pitched a whole ton of innings, 102 innings pitched, 12-5 record, but had really great numbers still, 1.92 ERA, 179 strikeouts, and 66 walks. And she also hit .414 and 3 home runs offensively. So, yeah, a lot of these players were great two-way players, these pitchers, too. There's not many that just pitched, didn't contribute much at the plate. They did a lot at the plate, too. And then the other selection from Sartell is Megan Dristy. She was .468 that she hit as a senior, added 36 hits, 23 RBIs, and 15 stolen bases. So both of them were, you know, kind of really key important players for them all year long.
Definitely. And to round out this team, Alyssa Sand from Albany, she's the last player on this first team for All Metros. She's a sophomore, and she was phenomenal this season. I mean, just a steady player that you knew that she was going to be able to get the bat on the ball. And she was able to hit .548 this season with a .857 slugging percentage, 46 hits, 4 triples, 12 doubles, 2 home runs, 27 RBIs, and 31 runs. She finished first team honors for All-State for Class 2A, as well as Granite Ridge All-Conference, and also hitter MVP this season. She's going to be coming back next season as an upperclassman, and kind of sky's the limit for Alyssa next year. But a lot of really good team players on the second team as well, so make sure to check out sctimes.com for it. You have a handful of eighth graders, juniors, seniors, and a lot of seniors on this first and second team, just because there's just a lot of talent that's going to be leaving. But hopefully, you know, there's different players that can maybe, you know, come through and be able to fill in some of those positions.
Yeah, it was even more impressive Alyssa's season after just playing so well during the basketball season. She was our All-Metro Player of the Year for girls basketball and now comes back and was one of the best softball players too. So really good future ahead for her at Albany too. And then we'll go into our last two sports. We have girls lacrosse and boys lacrosse to wrap it up. We'll start with girls. For this one, I wrote this one. Brian handled the boys lacrosse team, and you know, St. Cloud was the one that was the most dominant in the area this year. And so that made the decision pretty easy to make Grace Miller of the St. Cloud Crush the player of the year. You know, she had a fantastic senior season. You know, last year her older sister Faith was the player of the year. Now she kind of followed in her footsteps and was named player of the year herself this year with 42 goals, even though she missed 2 games for the Crush. She also totaled 22 ground balls and 7 assists, and she was also a first-team All-Metro selection in 2021. So kind of her leadership and captaincy really showed throughout this year to lead St. Cloud. They were able to pick up 6 wins and have some pretty dominant efforts throughout, and, you know, Grace was a big part of that. So she was the player of the year. A couple other names on that first team from St. Cloud, you have Emma Binsfeld, who tallied 25 goals and 7 assists. She also led the team with 47 ground ball pickups and was a really dangerous attack weapon for them. You know, the Crush, they scored double-digit goals in 9 of their 15 games this year, and all 6 of their victories, they scored at least double-digit goals. So that offense was really key to their success, and Emma was another, you know, really important part of that. The other kind of main tentpole piece of that for the Crush was Cameron Orline, another senior for St. Cloud. She had 17 assists to lead the team. She also was second on the team with 27 goals and had 42 ground ball pickup. So those 3 players of Cameron, Emma, and Grace, they formed a really strong attack that led the Crush to a pretty solid season this year. And then the other 2 players on the first team for All Metro come from Sartell Sauk Rapids, and then Ricori, Bella Cahoot of Sartell Sauk Rapids, had over 20 goals this year. And then she also had a 6-goal game against Ricori kind of late in the season, which was the Storm and Sabres' first win. And she'll continue playing lacrosse at Division III Augsburg next year. And then Kendra Orbeck of Ricori is the last player on the first team. She was key for the Spartans in their midfield, winning a lot of draw controls for them. And she also had 29 ground ball pickups. She also had 3 goals and 2 assists while also mainly handling some defensive duties and being a big part of that midfield, like I said. So, you know, she was named the Section 8 All-Section second team as a midfielder, and I know she'll be sorely missed too. But there's also, you know, a couple sophomores, freshmen, juniors on the second team, and all three teams also represented on the second team. So still a lot to look forward to in the future. But you know, this first team was all five seniors, so there's going to be a lot of spaces up for grabs next year for girls lacrosse.
That's what I was looking at too. I was like, man, there's a lot of seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of fun to see, and I'm glad that they could all have a good senior season and being able to end this way. So kind of transitioning into boys lacrosse before we head to our break. This is the last All-Metro team that we haven't really discussed yet. So dive into it a little bit. Player of the year goes to Aiden Hilger from Sartell Sauk Rapids, a senior, and rightfully so deserves it after the season that he had. You kind of thought, okay, what's he gonna do? What is he gonna do in 2022 that he didn't do in 2021? And he basically did 2021 and possibly even topped it this year. He finished with 56 goals, 24 assists, had 83 ground balls, named to Section 8 first team. He's going to be playing at University of St. Thomas next year for lacrosse. So big kudos to him on that. But, I mean, just not only a good competitor in the sense of, you know, obviously 56 goals is a lot, but he also was able to help a lot of these teams because, I mean, lacrosse is a growing sport in the central Minnesota area. And talking to Jacob Saylor, they're the head coach for the Storm and Sabres, he even said, you know, he's helped the game just to, in a sense, just be able to grow more. I mean, there's more kids that are interested. There's more, you know, youth kids that want to play for the Storm and Sabres, and it's a cool feeling to have. And so I'm definitely going to miss him next year just with his versatility on the field and such. But he's going to have a guy that's going to be kind of replacing him this year or next year, which is John Claypool. He also made it onto the first team from the Storm and Sabres. He's a junior, going to be a senior next year. Finished the season with 36 goals, 35 assists, 71 total points. Also had 47 ground balls and was one of the top offensive players for the Storm and Sabres. And he will continue to be next year as a senior. So be interested to see how he kind of takes over that role. Also on the Storm and Sabres, you have Bennett Crane. He's a junior. He was probably one of the best defensive players for the Storm and Sabres this year. Sounds like he had 12 goals, 28 assists, 40 total points, had 33 ground balls, and he will be returning with John to kind of be that 1-2 punch in a sense heading into next year for the Storm and Sabres. Also on this team, on this first team, was Layden Othod from St. Cloud. He's a senior goalie, probably one of the best goalies not only in central Minnesota but also probably in the state. He was second in the state for saves with 218 saves, had 8 wins. He kind of was the quarterback of that defense, and you could tell just by the way that he spoke to different people and was able to kind of get formations going on the defensive end. On the other side, Joe Torberg from St. Cloud, a junior. He was also on the team. He was probably one of the most offensive skilled players for the Crush this season. Had 36 goals, 26 assists, 62 total points. Showed that leadership, and he's going to be continuing to do that next year as a senior, and has plenty of offensive weapons that you can find in the second team with Connor Harnes and so forth, Connor Waverin. Those guys will be coming back as juniors next year, and Sartell Sauk Rapids also had a couple guys in the second team as well. So plenty of talent to go around in the central Minnesota area for boys lacrosse, and should be kind of an exciting season next year, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that about wraps up finally the spring season. We can kind of start to look ahead to some of events, different stories going out throughout the summer, and then ahead to the fall very, very soon, already probably a little over a month away before we really start kind of focusing on that. But that'll do it for our All-Metro team. So I think that'll wrap up the first part of the show. So we're going to take a quick break. We come back on the other side, we're going to talk some amateur baseball and St. John's football. So stick with us, and we will be right back. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the SC Times Sports Report podcast. We're going to hit St. John's football here. Did a kind of a look ahead to the season last week, and then we'll also touch on town ball as we wrap up the show today. Brian, what are your questions about St. John's football? Let's flip it around.
I guess, I mean, I think the main part is obviously, you know, the legacy of St. John's football, just in the sense of their dominance throughout the years. I know the one exciting matchup that Dave has been talking about since the schedule has come out is Whitewater. Just talk about kind of the matchups and kind of what you expect to see this season from the St. John's team.
Yeah, no, they do have a really exciting non-conference schedule that they had a tough time putting together because obviously not many teams want to play them when you're pretty traditionally strong. And now with how the kind of football playoffs work, there's only five at-large teams, so a loss to a highly ranked team early in the year does not look good on your resume. So not many teams want to play them. So Whitewater kind of has the same problem, so it kind of worked out that they are going to end up playing each other to start off the season September 3rd at St. John's, so that'll be an awesome way to kick off the year. And then the following week, they're going to play UW-River Falls, which is where I went to college. They had their best season basically in history last year, and they're going to be playing them also at home on September 10th. So two WIAC teams who finished in the top 25 last year will be a great test to kind of see where the Johnnies are at to begin the year. So I'm excited to see that. You'll get a really quick kind of litmus test of how good they may be this year. Mm-hmm. And the last time St. John's and Whitewater played was 2019, the Division III semifinals, which was a three-point game, a really great game on both sides of that too. So I know they've already traded game tape. They're already like breaking down film of each other, even though we're still a couple months away. So I know the coaches and all the players are really ready to get to that game. And St. John's, they're going to enter the year. They're ranked number 13th in the preseason poll. So last year they were up a bit higher for most of the year, lost in the second round of the playoffs. So they'll have a little work to do to climb back up. But they do have some exciting people coming back. They did lose a good amount of people they lost about half on both sides of the ball. So there will be a bit of depth returning, but also some new guys that need to step up. Some of the preseason All-Americans, you have Alex Larson, their senior tight end, and then Michael Wozniak, their senior defensive lineman, are two that they expected back. And they also had a couple surprises. They had receiver Matt Moore and running back Henry Trost, who are both starters. Some of their best players decided to come back for a fifth year like very recently that they were not expecting to. So they got a nice little boost there. That'll be key for trying to, keep making the playoffs. I believe they have a MIAC record 7 consecutive trips to the NCAA playoffs, trying to make it 8. That automatic bid is going to be key possibly, but also that strong schedule could kind of help them. If they would lose a game or something, that strength of schedule comes into play down the stretch. But I'd expect some good games with Bethel again this year. They play them week 3 too. So you have those two Wyatt games and Bethel week 3. That's who they beat by 1 point in the conference championship last year. They're going to be playing at Bethel again for that. And then a possible, depending on how the season goes, they could play in the championship game again. But it would be at St. John's this year instead of on the road. So a lot to still play out, but a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that people don't really know a ton about is there's been some construction being made on the Johnny's football field and some new turf this upcoming year. Maybe just talk about kind of that, as well as looks like some good news on the offensive end in the sense of some familiarity from the quarterback position. Just talk about kind of how they expect to play on new turf, obviously when it comes to turf, it's a whole different situation, but new turf can always be an interesting, got to kind of get it back to rhythm and all that type of stuff. Just maybe talk about those 2 points.
Yeah, they first put in turf in 2002, and even their head coach, Gary Fosh, and he said back then he was against it. He was kind of a traditionalist, but now he thinks it's one of the best decisions they ever made, especially for a high-powered attacking offense like St. John's has been for decades. So, that helps them a lot. They replaced it in 2012. They're replacing it now in 2022. It's kind of every 10 years they're on that cycle. And it's going to be, it sounds like it'll be a little different, not huge different. It's not going to be like, red, like an all red field or something. It's still going to be green. It might look a tiny bit different to fans, but that'll be key to just, having that. There's also a lot of construction. When I went there out to interview Coach Fosh, like all the parking lots, all the roads, everything's dug up out there. So it might look a little nicer, be a little less bumpy when you get to Collegeville for that first game in September. But besides that facilities part, yeah, like you said, Aaron Severson coming back at quarterback. You know, he's a Division I transfer from Colorado State. He played, you know, seven and a little bit of change games last year. He was 7-0 as a starter, had great stats, 1,700 yards, 17 touchdowns before he got hurt in that Gustavus game and had his year come to an end because of a broken leg. So he's back. It sounds like he's going to be 100% by the season opener. Played, it sounded like, almost a whole half up in Canada when they had a kind of preseason spring-type game they were able to get in this year that had been delayed a couple of years. So he's been getting some experience, getting healthy, and I'd expect Johnny's to be, you know, contending for playoff spots. MIAC title's kind of the usual this year. It'll be really fun when we get there in September.
Absolutely. Well, good. Well, I think the only thing left on this podcast is talking about town ball. Town ball has been happening for a while, but we're just kind of starting to get into the rhythm of things when it comes to amateur baseball. Just due to the high school season, we just didn't have a whole lot of time to focus on town ball. But this past week, I was able to go out to a couple games. Sartell Muskies and Sartell Stone Ponies had their rivalry game on Wednesday night. Stone Ponies were able to get the win on that one, which was kind of a big win for them. I know they were very much excited about that. They held on to a 2-1 victory, kind of smooth sailing for the entire game. And then all of a sudden, the Muskies kind of crept back a little bit on that ninth inning, and they were able to kind of hold them off and be able to get that 2-1 victory, get a little bit closer to the Muskies. Stone Ponies and the Muskies are at like the 2-3 spots in the league standing. So going to be kind of interesting to see how that unfolds over the next few weeks. And then I made my trip out to the Cold Spring Baseball Park for the Rockies game on Friday night, just before 4th of July weekend. Was able to watch them take on the St. Nicholas Knicks, creative mascot name. And they were able to get the 7-4 win over the Knicks to kind of start off that weekend. Jake Brinker, being pretty dominant on the mound, was able to pitch 6 or 7 innings. Some good offense all around by that team, and that was kind of the thing that they were looking for, was that offense. They were kind of hoping that offense was going to kind of kick in sometime soon. Now that they got that balance between pitching, defense, and offense, they're looking good as they get ready for the next couple of weeks in the Central Valley League. The next couple of weeks, there's, I think, probably two and a half weeks left of amateur baseball regular season, and then they'll get into the league playoffs towards the end of July, and that will carry into region playoffs probably end of July, early August, and then the, you know, top four, three, however many bids you get for each region, that will make up the teams that are going to be going to state at the end of August and ending at the end of Labor Day. So quite a few tournaments and different games coming up, some big games coming up when it comes to seedings and things like that. So be interested to kind of see how things unravel for all the local leagues, you know, whether that's Stearns County, Sauk Valley, all those types of Central Valley leagues. That'll be kind of fun to see. And tonight we'll be checking out Class B instead of Class C with the Cold Spring Springers tonight as they take on Kimball Express tonight in a fun game. And they've been kind of on a roll lately, 13-2 to start off the season, and seems like they're undefeated at home. So should be kind of a fun matchup as we get ready for Wednesday night.
Yeah, it'll be good to get out there, get to see them, especially because, you know, last year was a tough year for them. They weren't able to play in the postseason, that band, but now they are able, you know, they're eligible again to play. So, and they've, you know, responded with having an incredible year, trying to position themselves well to make it back to that state stage and try to make a run like they have many, many years, as you see that huge plaque out in the parking lot with all the state appearances, see if they can add to that this year. But yeah, that's kind of the plan for now. I know there might be a couple games we go to as well next week, but we'll probably talk about that in a future podcast. But that about wraps it up for today's show. Anything else you think we missed, Brian?
No, just keep checking sctimes.com for all the latest information on sports and such as we get ready for this upcoming weekend and next week.
Yeah, and you know, at some point, I don't know if it'll be next week, might be every 2 weeks or so for the next couple podcasts. We'll kind of see as we go, but just keep subscribed to the feed and it'll show up there when they're done, probably still kind of middle of the week whenever that happens. But I think that'll about wrap it up for today's show. So once again, thank you for tuning in to the SC Times Sports Report Podcast, and we will see you again next time.